It's showtime at Pizza Pizza. Hi, it's Pat Finelli presenting Dinner and a Movie with over $15 in savings. Order a small, medium, or a large pizza with any three toppings, any three Coke, and a free two-for-one Cineplex movie admission for only $13.99. Now playing dinner, drinks, and a movie for $13.99. It's showtime at Pizza Pizza.
There's nothing more groovy than pizza and a movie. Order Pizza Pizza.
That salad and man up your lunch hour with the best hockey coverage possible. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Game day, Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey on Sportsnet. Darren Millard in the studio along with Nick Kyprios and Doug McLean. What?
He's late. Listen. Why is it okay that you're on TV in your chair, but you're so scared to come over here with you? Give us the long arm thing.
I like to have my research early so I can prep it.
Come on, come closer.
What a night last night.
Come closer. Come on.
Thanks, bud.
The underdogs came through last night in the National Hockey League.
It's like you're Vera from Cheers.
Detroit loses. Florida loses. Boston loses. As the playoff races stack up, also a pretty nasty play involving Duncan Keith. We'll get to that in just a bit. Size up what's going to happen tonight in the NHL. Springtime hate game of the night, Washington-Philadelphia. Watch that one on Sportsnet 360. And Bob Clark is going to join us, Philadelphia Flyers Senior Vice President. More action and reflecting on the 72 Summit Series between Canada and the Soviets. And they're going to get together and stop by the four Canadian cities in which the first four games were played. But, boy, you see these games in the NHL with these teams that are out of it. They're done playing out the string, and they're so dangerous.
It's been a pattern that we've seen over the years. When you sit there and say, okay, teams that all of a sudden don't have much to play for other than personal pride and maybe earn a job or maybe pad their stats for a contract. And listen, I think it's a different beast when you talk about playing with the pressure of trying to make the playoffs like Detroit for the 24th time, or if you're one of those teams that just have nothing to gain except some feel-good feelings going into the off season.
And fighting for home ice advantage, fighting for positioning, fighting to get in. The last 20 games of the NHL season are a grind, and it is intense time. So, you know, and you see Detroit, that was the one that drove me crazy last night. They're down 2-0. They come back and go ahead 3-2 halfway through the third, and they blow it in a big, big game to a Montreal team, a wounded Montreal team.
Where Boston outplays Carolina. Right. Throughout the whole
Jersey,
and can't get a break, can't get a 2-on-1 to go in the net.
And the Toronto Maple Leafs,
yeah,
playing on back to back nights, drill the Florida Panthers on the road.
Yeah, and their fight. I mean, again, you keep going back to Florida. Where do they finish, and who do they get in the first round, and do they get home ice? So, those are big games to blow. And.
But you want
to play well
in
Tampa too. The night before,
you do want to go in feeling good.
Totally, you do,
right? And you know, even if Detroit or Boston find a way to get in, they're going in limping right now. Goaltending's an issue now in Detroit.
Some injuries, hitting people. I mean, the Islanders all of a sudden were sputtering big time. Then they pick up a couple of big. Overtime wins, shootout wins, and get them back in the mix. And all of a sudden, they're 2 points behind the Panthers. You know,
so is it easy to play the way that the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs and those types of scenarios last night, where you don't have the pressure on you? Like, why do you see that?
But then again, you look at the Vancouver Canucks. And you see the exact opposite, mm-hmm. You know, where you've got a bunch of young guys that are fighting for their positioning on the team for next year, trying to the Vertanens and the McCanns and this whole group there. And yet they've lost 9 in a row. And the Leafs, on the other hand, are battling like crazy.
Leafs since the trade deadline have been really good.
I know.
You know what, though? There is a comfort for a room that the only ones that believe in yourselves are the people in that room, that you have that me versus the world mentality. And it does work. You know, it does calm the nerves down somewhat when you've got everything to gain and really nothing else to lose. But according to you this morning, what's the first thing you said? The Leafs are blowing it. The Leafs are blowing it. When they lose, they win.
But you know,
which one is it?
So it's bizarre. They had the last pick or the last place, the 20%
locked up.
Yeah, and then now it's all of a sudden today. It's Edmonton, Toronto, and Vancouver all tied. So but talk
Winnipeg's
about the Leafs
in the mix,
right? And Columbus. So you look at it and you say, what's Jimmy Benning and Trevor Linden thinking about when they stood up a year, you know, 2 years ago when they were hired and say, we're going to rebuild on the fly. And today they could pick first overall. I mean, and then you're thinking, how good would that be for them?
Is that not great for
them? Well, I think it's great. If they get Matthews and Bo Horvat as your number one, two, all of a sudden the look of your group can change dramatically. So, you know, and maybe that's what they should have stood up and said 2 years ago. We're going to tear this apart.
Not in that market.
But they didn't say that. They said, we're going to rebuild on the fly. And yet still, none of us really picked Vancouver to make the playoffs for sure this year. But nobody picked us
to finish 30th.
Not a chance. So, tough injuries and lots of kids, but still, nobody would have expected that.
What do you make of Nazem Kadri's eventful last week? From the coach having his back to going out, scoring a hat trick last night, and really has had one of the best stretches that you've seen out of him during the course of his career.
Yeah, and the numbers will probably put him in the range where he's been in the past, and that's in that 50, 55-point range. He won't quite get there unless he just goes on a complete tear the last half dozen games. But, I mean, we've seen this before. We've seen that skill. We've seen his ability to put the puck in the net. You know, ultimately, I think what it truly comes down to, and this is not just for Kadri, but anyone else on a team that's sitting at the bottom of the league, is not so much the players they are now, but where do you envision them when you hope that the team can contend eventually for a Stanley Cup? And I will say this, I mean, with what you've seen out of Kadri, does that now all of a sudden make him a number one centerman in the NHL? And more importantly, is it your vision that he's a number one centerman on a Stanley Cup contending team?
No, it doesn't for me. Exactly. But I'll tell you what it does.
So that kind of puts things still in perspective.
But what it does for me is it really solidifies him.
As a number two?
As a really good number two. And you know what? That's still pretty valuable in the league. A really good number two. I mean, does he become as valuable to the Toronto Maple Leafs as Turris is to Ottawa? Is he that caliber? I think the different type of player, I know, but pretty close from a contribution.
But how different is your evaluation of him, perception of him today compared to the start of the season and training camp?
Much better, but it started to really come around. I have always kind of liked him as a player. I always thought he was a number two guy. I like the fact that all year long he's gone head to head with the other team's best players. I like the fact that he's had a lot of chances and didn't score. At least he was getting the chances, and now they're starting to go in for him a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that he's playing any different, you know.
Well, the skill.
So I think it's been a good growth year for him.
They've gotten more skill in the lineup. They're a lot more skilled than they were at the beginning of the year.
He's been playing with pretty skilled guys all year, hasn't he?
Oh, no.
You know, he played with
finishers.
Van Riemsdyk and Komarev a lot, didn't he? You know, so, I mean, he has been with some, you know. But, hey, I like Kadri. If his attitude and all the little things, you know, that he went through last year growing up, if they grow like his game is growing,
and if
he's got a chance to be a good player.
For me, he's he's got tremendous skill and he's relied on that skill, but he still doesn't have the reputation for a guy that pushes himself off the ice. And for me, and Babcock's talked about this, is where's his commitment to get stronger, to go to the next level?
And that's where you hope you see the progress, that's the evolution of him.
You know, or will he always be that guy that just relies on his God-given talents?
So we're doing Ottawa tonight, and we've had a lot of conversation the last couple of days in the prep about Zibanejad. Who would you rather have, Zibanejad or a Kadri? Both high picks in the draft. If I'm not mistaken, probably both of them right around that seventh spot in the draft. And, you know, both of them important guys for the battle of Ontario teams, that they develop into important guys. So it's interesting.
I just wonder, going in, what would you give Nazem Kadri now?
Dollar-wise?
Yeah.
I think he's at 4-1. I think an arbitration case will get him 5. So, like, are you ready to make a commitment for 5 or 6 years to him?
Are you?
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't. I'd go short term on him.
See?
I would go short. It may cost you.
May cost you.
And that's okay. If you don't mind paying guys if they become real players. I still think Kadri needs pressure on him. I really believe that. And I think you go short and maybe pay a little bit more, go short and see what he becomes instead of rewarding him with a 5-year deal. That's what I would do. And I wouldn't go to arbitration with him. I would try to get a deal done. I don't like the fact that you have to go to arbitration with your top important guys. I don't like it. I don't think it's smart. And I think they should work to try to get a deal done.
But if you're not...
He's not going to sign the deal that you think...
Yeah.
No, that you want him to sign.
Then though. you negotiate like crazy to try to get something done. And, so I mean, I know it's a last resort.
So you tell me as a general manager what you think will get done.
I would hope that in the 5 range and maybe 3 years. Mm. And it probably won't. It probably won't.
5? You're going to give up 1 year of your unrestricted free agency to stay at 5, not a chance.
Then try to do 2, but then you can't do that because he's walking.
It's not workable.
Do a one-year deal with him. Battle on a one-year.
Give him $5 million.
For 1 year.
5-1, 5-2 for 1 year.
Yeah.
That's what arbitration will get him.
So they may have no choice. I wouldn't want to go there.
Bob Clark's coming up, talk about the 72 Summit Series and what they have planned for next fall. Darren Millard, along with Nick Kyprios and Doug McLean here in Hockey Central. 3-game night in the NHL, Ottawa and Winnipeg. That's a big game.
Zibanejad, fourth overall.
For the Winnipeg Jets and that whole lottery pick.
Who texted you that?
A researcher.
7 o'clock, Hockey Central gets you started. Then it's Calgary and Anaheim. Calgary hasn't won in Anaheim since 2004. During the regular season, so we'll see what develops there. We get some pretty cool things coming up, just flashbacks about what's gone on since Calgary last won in Anaheim. Craig Conroy is also going to stop by and FaceTime with us tonight. He was on that team.
We did a big thing on that last year, didn't we? We're going to do it every year.
It was in the playoffs, when they met in the playoffs, that they did that. Washington, Philadelphia, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 360. The Boston Herald's Stephen Harris is reporting that Jimmy Vasey will sign with his hometown Bruins when he becomes an unrestricted free agent on August 15th. Just want to follow up on the extensive conversation that we had yesterday.
And I talked this morning to a couple of people who tell me that don't underestimate LA and Chicago in the mix as well for this guy. So it'll be interesting. Boston, I mean, I know
Chicago's had great success with that kind of angle. Right.
And LA would be an interesting spot. He is the type of player they could use. So the good teams continue to try to stay in the mix for those type of players. And don't think they're not excited, those teams, including the Bruins and the Leafs. Yeah. And if Chicago and LA are in the mix, that he opted not to sign.
And it's an entry-level contract. It's not like anyone's outbidding anybody here or has the magic formula. It's where he wants to live, where he wants to think he can win
and it's the way give Chicago himself the and best LA's opportunity. With their payrolls and the way that they have to pay their superstars, that you have to fill in the bottom end.
And he fits in nicely there. So, but isn't it, it's nice now. So Nashville's a nice city where we like Nashville. But Boston, Chicago, LA. I mean, I like Nashville.
That's the report from Boston Herald's Stephen Harris. Last night, Chicago against the Minnesota Wild. How many games does Duncan Keith get? I don't think it starts with should he be suspended. How many games will he be suspended?
I think it's five. I said last night, I think it's five. I looked at it numerous times. I remember Brad May slashing Steve Hines and getting 20.
Not even close.
And this is
not
much,
even close.
No, but this is
not even close.
This is much more severe. This is a lot less severe.
A lot less.
The player was still cut. He wasn't, but he didn't miss any time.
I don't know. I mean,
I say five.
Can you make a case that he was just getting up?
No.
No.
Not for me.
No. First of all,
off balance. I looked at that. I tried to do that, but I couldn't find it. I said to Kip, the positive thing is, I guess if there's a positive, he didn't use two hands. He just used one. So for me, it's five.
Who cares? Three, four, five. Does it really matter?
Like, well, it does when you're fighting for...
No, I'll tell you what it does. It matters to the teams. If you're playing Chicago in the first round, you want it to be seven.
No, it's not seven. No, he's not missing a playoff game.
Okay, but...
He's not missing playoff
games. So all of a sudden, then this is a break. This is a break for Chicago, and it's a break for Duncan Keith. He goes into the playoffs rested.
I can understand if you're Chicago and you're still trying to figure this thing out. I mean, you want him back as soon as you... possible, but people are also talking about sending messages, and this is one that
is that what you sound like when you send a message?
Gotta go 10 games and wipe the playoffs. Just be quiet.
They don't like it. Just the league does not like it.
Well, no, okay.
You can't.
What?
Okay. It doesn't really matter.
He's not a repeat offender.
It really, if it's 3, 4, 5, doesn't matter. They're still strong enough that they're going to be fine. He'll get rested, and then you'll move on, and then a year from now, you won't even remember if it was 3, 4, or 5.
He's not a repeat offender.
He's not.
But he has a history.
Not missing playoff games because of this.
He's got a mean streak, eh?
Oh, I know. I love him. I love him.
Who doesn't?
Oh, no. I love him.
But, okay, so.
I mean, this guy plays.
But does it matter who he is?
He is.
To the league, does it matter who he is?
Not
Conn
really.
Smythe winner, Norris Trophy winner?
He makes so much room for himself. He is the best at accidentally on purpose, I think, and anybody in the league. He knows the right time to push the envelope but not rip it right open. And that's just, I've said this before. Cost of doing business. That's all that was.
That kind of makes sense. I've never heard that before. Push the envelope, but never rip it right open. Never heard that followed up like that. Nice one.
Thank you.
So, because it's Duncan.
Doug soon, maybe.
So, are you suggesting because it's Duncan Keith, he should get less games?
They always do.
I know, but are you suggesting the league should do that?
They always do.
Is that right?
I don't care what's
if that
right
happens
or wrong,
a third time.
They all
we have to
break.
Know. We have
that's the way it
okay,
is.
Okay, enough already. Sabanajad was sixth overall. Where's my researcher? Seriously, I was sixth overall.
Just
wake
stay
up.
With the program.
I mean, I got to fire a researcher here.
Hey, stay with me here. Stay with me.
Listen, okay? Duncan. For me,
it's different rules for different guys. We get that.
There's only one question for me on Duncan Keith, and I say he gets five. Does he deserve a playoff game for that? If you're St. Louis and you're playing him in the first round, what are you saying?
Oh, yes.
That's not happening.
I say five.
I'm not even sure if it's five.
I say
four.
Five.
And then is five. If you want to go five, I don't care. I don't care. Like
they
I said,
five games
it's
left
not
in the
an
season.
Alt.
That's
it's
what
not
I'm
a,
saying.
It's
That's
not
why
a,
I said five. Give him the rest of the season.
It's not get changing him anything.
He's got to play 32 minutes a game in the playoffs. Give him a rest.
Rest. It's all good. It's all good, but don't ever try to make the argument that this is going to be something that needs to go into the playoffs.
I like Torchetti's comment on it last night. They said to Torchetti, what did you think of it? And he said, I said to Chuck, are you ready to go? And then he said, because I wanted to double shift him. And
you know what's
he
great?
Double shifted him.
You know what's great?
Didn't affect Coyle, but he was cut.
That we got Bob Clark coming on at 12:35. I would suggest.
Was his a two-hander?
That
slash.
I'd like to ask him how many times he saw that slash in the 72 series.
No, or in the 70s.
or at any time when the Flyers played. Like
Are you saying Bobby wouldn't have used one hand?
Bob Clark was Duncan Keith Before Duncan Keith was Duncan Keith.
But Bobby would have used one hand or two.
You following me on that one?
Not really.
Hey. Bobby have used one or two.
They're cut from the same cloth. How about that?
That works.
How about that? All right?
Yeah, that's...
They were superstars who were sneaky dirty.
I used to love...
Sneaky dirty.
I used to love having conversations with Dennis Potvin about
Pronger wasn't as sneaky.
About Bobby Clark.
Pronger got suspended like a gazillion times.
Keith wasn't sneaky there.
Do you remember?
But he still comes across as that kind of, you know, Pronger's got that physical element where you just look at him and he can't hide. Duncan Keith can hide. Bobby Clark hit a little bit, right? He turned his stick over at a face-off and just clip you and nobody would see it. And that's sneaky.
And Pronger would just step on you and slash
you. And everybody would see it.
And slash
you. Everybody would see it.
What do you think Keith's defense would be?
I don't know. In high school, it was always dog ate my homework.
People are confused about the repeat offender on Keith, too, because there was an article written that he was a repeat offender. It was past the timeline, so he is not a repeat offender, but he has history. Sedin's
2013 against the Kings.
And Sedin's five games for an elbow to the head.
It's not like there's some formula for repeat offenders. It's just something that's noted. That's all. Yep. And I'm sure in the NHL office, they probably got a stack of highlights with Duncan Keith on times that he wasn't suspended, that he could have been suspended, you know? So I don't fall into that. Is he or isn't he a repeat offender? They know exactly who they're dealing with.
Yeah. He's got a history, but he's not a repeat offender. We got to have the information correct here. That's one thing we pride ourselves in. Where Sabanajad was drafted. Is he a repeat offender? We're on top of it all here.
There is.
I'd like more. Like again, you push the envelope, but you like more. You like your defense to have that element. We don't have enough guys with that type of element in the league, that they're willing just that
slashing guys in the face.
Yes, just that. You know what? I'll do whatever it takes to win.
You can't.
Too many guys to want to play nice games.
Nick, you can't slash guys in the face because you get suspended for it. So you
can, but you just got to be careful when you do it.
Yeah. We can't listen, Nick. We can't.
We've lost.
We can't push for guys to slash people in the face on this show.
I'm not suggesting you go and
do
that.
We can't go there.
Don't get me wrong here.
I'm not. Don't go there.
But, you know, people say, well, we got to get that out of the game. Do you understand that
slashing people in the face, we got to get out of the game.
Is the player he is because he's got that ability to do that?
No.
No.
I think Duncan Keith is an extremely skilled,
talented,
smart hockey player.
And a little bit dirty. Take his game to another level because he's got that I will rip your eyes out of your head if I have to element.
But you can't.
And there's some guys that won't go there. There won't go there. You got to show people that you are crazy enough to go there, and it will buy you extra room.
I'm not sure he's a three-time Stanley Cup champion because he's got a screw loose when things go crazy.
I can tell you that there's a ton of guys like that because he's willing to go to more of an extreme, takes his game to another level. It took Pronger to another level. It takes certain guys. Am I wrong here? Am I wrong? You tell me, as a general manager, there are times when you got to hold a guy back and you love that, but you hate it when you have to push a guy and prod him and make him go.
I agree 100% with that. I agree 100%
with that. Well, that's all I'm trying to say.
But you also said you love the fact that we can't say that it's good to slash guys in the face.
Okay, listen.
You can't say
for
that.
All you kids at home watching, I don't
take
suggest
that,
that
agree
you go
with you.
Out there and do it. But you got to have a guy that
with
was
some viciousness
and bite. I'll go back to Bob Clark, right? Coming on at 12:30. We'll ask him.
Okay.
But there's a guy that was willing to almost do anything to win. Keith is like that. I know guys that probably are even more talented than Keith that just don't want to rock the boat.
So what you're saying in a weird way is that you love guys like Lucic. Who, when you're looking at the lineup, you're nervous about playing against him because of what he brings to the table. I agree with that. But we can't condone slashing a guy in the face.
Yes.
We can't condone.
Waiver news today.
Can we put something on the bottom of the screen that's saying that we don't condone violence?
No, we didn't say we don't condone violence.
No, you know what we put on the bottom of the screen?
We don't condone slashes in the face.
The opinions expressed in this program are those of the commentators. and not reflected by
solely.
So waivers today, Scrivens, Montreal, Smith, Toronto, and Jake Virtanen will have a hearing today for the interference play against Roman Polak last night. Ottawa, Winnipeg, Calgary, Anaheim, doubleheader on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, Philadelphia and Washington on Sportsnet 360. We'll talk to the former captain of the Philadelphia Flyers, Bob Clark, about what happened last night with Duncan Keith and the Chicago Blackhawks and Charlie Coyle, plus the 72 Summit Series. They're going to get back together and tell some stories in a tour coming up in September. It's Hockey Central Noon, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We are back at Hockey Central. Developing story. Darren Millard here with Nick Kyprios and Doug McLean. Elliot Friedman is reporting. Mark Jankowski is a Calgary Flame. He will go to AHL Stockton on a PTO to start the season. So as the Calgary Flames get their draft pick coming out of college.
Why on a PTO?
So he can play in the American League on a PTO and it doesn't affect his NHL contract. Oh. So he doesn't burn. If he stayed with the Flames and practiced and there,
yes,
he could burn a
then
year.
Then it would burn a year off.
But he's not. They're not burning the year.
Here is Bob Clark joining us, as promised, a member of the 72 Summit Series. And there's a 72 Summit Series tour that's going to take place in theaters in the four Canadian cities where Team Canada faced the Soviets in 1972. With the exception of the Toronto date, the event will take place on the exact date that the games were played 44 years ago. So September 2nd, Montreal. September 6th in Winnipeg, September 8th in Vancouver, and then the Toronto date will take place September 10th at the Sony Center for Performing Arts. Bob, where did the idea of this tour come about?
Well, Pat Stapleton is head of the committee, and we've been getting together once a year more to see each other and to stay in touch with each other and stuff. And they got this group together and said, let's see if we can't at least keep a little bit of 72 going. It was considered the biggest sporting event in Canadian history. And if we can do a small share of keeping it going, I think it's good.
Do you have stories that you haven't told?
Yes.
Well,
yes, he does.
Sure, there's lots of those kind of stories too. But I think there are. I think there's a lot of things that that went on that were never brought up, and 45 years later, the stories could be a little different when you remember them now, too.
Bob, you think about all the stars that were on that team, and you hear the Phil Esposito stories and, you know, the Henderson goals and all that. But the guy that sort of jumped out at me as being just an amazing talent on that team was Pete Mihalovich. What was he like in that era and in that series?
Pete was, I think, a better hockey player than Frank overall. He didn't produce as much in the NHL, but he had unbelievable skills. He had the same size as Frank and stuff, but I think he needed somebody to push him all the time. Mm-hmm. In 72, he didn't need anybody to push him, and he was outstanding. But, you know, when he played in Pittsburgh, he was just okay. And he played in Montreal and was really good when he had John Ferguson pushing him. Mm-hmm. Had he had Ferguson on his line his whole career, he would have been considered better than Frank, I think.
Yeah.
He was a great talent.
Yeah, he sure was.
Bob, when you reflect on the 72 series, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Is it the rally with the country, or the viciousness on the ice? Like, where does your mind go first?
I'd like to call it competitiveness, but I think it was a nasty series. There was a lot of players from both sides who never would have played that way. until that series got going, and all of a sudden we were all playing that way. And that actually was probably closer to the style of game that I liked than a Paul Anderson or a Ron Ellis liked. That whacking and hacking and dirty shit going on all the time, and it was a crude series.
Let's make sure.
Hold on. Do you think if the NHL player safety was monitoring that series, that there would have been one player left on the ice?
That's why they had 38.
If it was Coley or Burke, who would you have preferred? Coley, Burke, or the new guy who's doing
Stephane
it now?
Kuntel.
Oh, okay, Kuntel.
Those were the days when you were supposed to take care of yourself on the ice, and if somebody abused you, you were allowed to get even.
Is there a player today?
So much now,
Bob. Is there a player today that is in the league today that you think would have fit right in that kind of series?
Don't mention Duncan Keith.
I love Keith. He's a great player. No, there's all kinds of players today. Today's player is so much superior in ability and everything else than what we had in those days. The league has changed the game. They've manufactured a game that wasn't the same as we had to play, or we all played, even in the NHL in those days. This is different now. These guys could all have played in that type of series.
Don't let Phil yell at the Vancouver fans on this tour, because they can't take it right now.
You know what? When did you do you remember your reaction to Phil's interview with John Esau?
You know what? I didn't see it until I don't know how many days later. We were in the locker room, obviously, when it went on and stuff, and when I did see it, obviously, I felt like the rest of the players that he's right. Yeah. I think it was more important to the fans in our country than it was to the players, because it united the fans behind us.
Yeah.
And we hadn't given them much to unite behind.
You know what? You talk about the viciousness on the ice, and I remember, I think I was 17 at the time watching that series and just on the edge of my seat the whole time, and the viciousness on the ice was one thing, but what about the viciousness from your management group, starting with Eagleson to Sinden to John Ferguson? I mean, seriously, they were as vicious and as into it as anybody on the ice was.
Well, they weren't vicious.
No, they were sort of vicious.
Hell, those guys.
What?
You know what? We all remember Henderson's three goals, and it made Henderson a hero in Canada. And we remember the great play from Mahovlich and how great Esposito was. But I think the reality of the situation was we became a better team once we got to know the Russians. We got in better condition, and we played in Sweden as a team and stuff. But the job Sinden and Ferguson did, getting the right matchups, getting the right people on the ice at the right time, increasing the workload for guys like Esposito and Mahovlich and Cornwallé and stuff like that. The coaching was as good a coaching as we've ever had in Canada through the last four games in Russia. And it's very easy to overlook, and it's very easy to give the players all the credit. But I personally don't feel we win that series if it's not for Sinden and Ferguson.
Yeah, they did it. Bob, they did a masterful job.
Did they do a good enough? Were they good at sheltering you guys a little bit from all that political crap that was going on off the ice, or were you guys well aware of everything that was happening?
There was never anything that I saw put in place to protect us from anything. Remember in those days, like, we had guys quit on the team, and we had guys who had been promised they were going to play and all of a sudden knew they were not going to play and just come to practice every day and work their asses off and contributed so much as best they could without being able to play. And, you know, there were some pretty big egos at the start of that series that got humbled really quick. And the coaches brought it all together when we got to Russia. I mean, it was not by accident. Those guys did a hell of a job, Ferguson and Sinden.
Bob Clark is with us, member of the 72 Summit Series team that defeated Russia in Game 8 and ended up winning the series, and they're going to go on tour again this September. Darren Millard with Nick Kiprios and Doug McLean here on Hockey Central. Do you guys get to go out and party in Russia at all when you're over there?
No, we didn't have I mean, they took us through the Kremlin and stuff like that, walking around time the square there. Yeah. But no, we didn't. We went to the circus. But, you know, like I don't know how the other guys were. I was there to play hockey. I didn't want to go to no God-darned circus. You know, nothing was in Russia bothered me. I mean, the food was fine. There was plenty of beer for everybody. I thought the refereeing was lousy, but I always think it's lousy. So
still
I
do. Play hockey. Was there any chance at all off the ice? I know they were the enemy, and you guys had to beat them. But I mean, were there off ice situations where you got to bump into them, meet them, Tretiak, interpreter conversations, anything at all?
Not in Russia at all, no. I actually got in 70, I forget, when the Russians come over and played the Flyers in 74 or 6 or sometime in there, I had Tretiak out to my house and had dinner and took him shopping and stuff and got to know him a little bit, but when we were in Russia, there was no communication between the teams.
There seems to be a amazing respect factor from the Russians now towards that team. Would you agree with that?
It seems to me that after 76, there was a 72 series and then the 76 series, that the Russians changed the way they played.
Yeah.
You know, they were a team that would hold on to the puck and overpass it and pass it back into their own end and do all those things. But after they lost 72 and 76, pretty soon they were shooting the puck in and chasing it like the rest of us. They converted to the Canadian game and obviously produced some great, great players over the years. They found out the style that that they brought to 72 and won with in the first few games wasn't successful in the long run.
So let me ask you this, Bob. Then, you know, we discovered how talented they were. What was the difference then? Why did we win and they lost? Were we willing to go places that they weren't?
That's, I don't know. I don't quite know how to answer that question. My answer to that type of question has always been, when a Canadian hockey player gets his ass to the wall, he's going to come after you with everything he's got. And when we were down in the last game, you got nothing to lose. Everything you've got to give, you give. And it's been the history of Canadian hockey players, I think, and it worked for us that time, and I think it's worked for us numerous times over the years.
Bobby, who
of a Canadian player.
The team jumps out at you as like one of the most underrated, underappreciated guys on that team? Is there anybody that really jumps out at you when you think back to that series? Not the superstars or the guys that got all, as you said, became heroes. Is there anybody that really jumps out?
Well, there's two guys in my mind. One was Serge Savard and the other was Ronnie Ellis. Ronnie Ellis played against Harlamov most of that series. And really, after the first game, Harlamov, I don't think he got a goal. And Ronnie, who played with Henderson and myself, never got any credit for allowing Henderson to get goals and myself to chase the puck, which I was good at. You know, he allowed us to play our game, and he just quietly stayed in the background. And Savard, all our defense had to be awful good, but Savard was one of those guys who quietly went about his business, and he never lost a game to the Russians in his career.
We're chatting with Bob Clark.
He was playing on a broken ankle. He broke his ankle and missed I think he missed the first game in Russia. I'm not sure. But he come back and played.
Chatting with Bob Clark on Hockey Central at noon with Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, and Doug McLean. You never like your opposition. You as much as anybody portrayed that. But did your dislike of the Russians go beyond that? Like, was there a real hatred for them?
Well, the Cold War was on, and mm-hmm. But no. You know, I used dislike or hate as a motivation. You know, I always
hated my opponents. I hated the guys who played on the Rangers. But when the game was over or when we retired and stuff, I liked them. And I found out after I was done playing that all the Soviet players were actually no different than the Canadian players. You know, they like to sit and talk hockey. They like to drink beer. They like the same things we did. They were just hockey players. But you did. I did use the fact that they were Russians to hate them.
Before we let you go, there's a young man that's playing in Arizona right now, wears number 16, having a great start to his career, a diabetic, and has really used you as inspiration. How much contact have you had with Max Domi over the years?
You know, I met Max, I was up watching my grandson, I believe he's London. When they were kids, Max, I guess, was about 14. I talked to him and his mother and the team, and I've talked to his dad a couple times, but I haven't had contact with Max. My grandson got his picture taken with Max when they played in Philadelphia and stuff. So I follow him. I mean, I follow him more because I think he's a really great player and really talented. And of course, having diabetes, and I have diabetes, but my own opinion of that is he's not a diabetic hockey player. He's just a hockey player who happens to have diabetes.
This has been a lot of fun, and I'd love to do it again, especially when you guys roll through town. Thanks for joining us.
All the best, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bob Clark, the 72 Summit Series Tour takes place in theaters in the four Canadian cities where Team Canada played Russia in 1972, with the exception of the Toronto date. The event's going to take place in the exact date where the games were played 44 years ago. They're going to get together in some theaters and tell stories previously known only to friends and families and teammates, stories from the dressing room. It's going to be...
I mean, as a guy that was a real fan and watched those games, I know you guys are a little bit younger than me and didn't maybe, but I watched every one of the... And yet, every time I see one of the names on this, whether it's Gary Bergman or Eddie Johnson or the names that pop up here, Bill Goldsworthy, it would be so amazing to listen to those stories. Bill White, I mean, Red Berenson. I mean, it was amazing to look at this list of names that are on here.
I think he summed it up. When Canadians have their backs against the wall,
yeah,
they come back at you, which goes back to my Duncan Keith. His wasn't against the wall. It was on the ice. Mm-hmm. And he's coming back at you. Mm-hmm. That's why those guys win. You following me, Darren? You with me?
We're not condoning slashing guys in the face, but we like those type of players.
We love those type of players.
Okay.
I don't think it makes a hill of beans. It means a hill of beans whether or not he's a Norris Trophy winner.
We're concerned whether he's going to get suspended or not. Do you think maybe he will not get any suspension?
Stop it. Like I said, 3, 4, 5, I don't care. Puck drops, game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Duncan Keith is playing.
Philadelphia Flyers play the Washington Capitals tonight, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 360. Philadelphia Flyers tied with Detroit with 87 points. They play one of two games in hand tonight that they have on the Detroit Red Wings.
Who do you think is Bobby Clark's favorite player on the Flyers? Simmons?
Simmons would be a good one.
Drew? Who would be his favorite player? I bet you it's Simmons.
Oh, Drew's got a little nastiness in
him,
too. Oh,
big time. He would love Drew and Simmons, wouldn't he? Yeah.
When you talked about the sticks and him two-handing people.
The viciousness.
Do you imagine how heavy the sticks were in the 70s?
Oh,
that thing would have taken up Charlie Coyle's
lumber.
Those head. Northlands. Yeah. I remember how heavy Eric Lindros's stick was, let alone these. Remember how heavy? Does Eric still have the heavy stick?
The big Bauer.
Oh, my God. That thing was heavy. I remember Jody Hull and Robert Svala saying to me, he cross-checked me across the back and broke my ribs with that piece of lumber.
Along with Washington, Philadelphia, 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 360. Winnipeg at home to Ottawa on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. 7 o'clock pregame show there. Followed by Calgary and Anaheim as we bring you a doubleheader. The second last week for Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey. On Sportsnet for this regular season before I turn our attention. The Anaheim Ducks in a fight for the Pacific Division lead. They enter tonight 1 point back of the Los Angeles Kings. They can take over top spot with another win at home against the Calgary Flames. Haven't won there since
2004. We'll chat with you tonight, 7 o'clock, Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey on Sportsnet.